Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the JMU Sports Blog Podcast. I'm Todd. I'm joined, as always, by my buddy Rob.
Hey, not much. How's everybody going?
Hopefully everyone is doing well. The Dukes are 7-1, and it is homecoming week. Getting excited. A big win, 38-10 over William & Mary down in Tribeville this past weekend, and a huge game on the horizon as Towson and Tom Flacco come to town this weekend. I will say I don't think this game is quite as huge as we thought it might be earlier in the year. But it is one
Has it gone all the way to maybe a trap game?
Yeah. The question is it elite? I'm not sure. It has maybe gone to a trap game. The trap of this game is that the bye is the following week. And I do worry that JMU is up. You know, I want to see them finish strong before that bye. I think you could hear in Coach Signetti's voice today and some of the players over the weekend, they are very much looking forward to having a week off, getting a break. And they've played this will be their ninth straight game. So,
Towson's almost in must win.
That's what I think we're going to talk about that later. Yeah, that's a real big thing. This is really do or die time for Towson. They are really on the ropes, and I imagine they will bring everything they can muster this weekend. Plus, I think the weather's a little iffy. It was perking up a little bit today, not looking quite as awful as it had been. But as always, we are brought to you by Pale Fire Brewing in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Go by the tap room anytime, mention the podcast, and get a free pint glass. Huge thanks to Susan and Tim and everybody over there at Pale Fire. They've been doing some good stuff lately. I've seen a lot of Pale Fire stuff out lately, Rob. So
yeah, a lot of events.
Yeah.
A lot of cool music shows and dance parties, and then the soccer tournament. Yeah, cool. It's really just become like a cool focal point of the community.
It has, yeah. And I think it's really fun. So go and see them anytime and mention us, and you'll get a free pint glass. A couple other notes. We rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. Rob, I can't tell how the numbers, ever since we switched to Anchor, I can't tell how any of this works, but it appeared like we were up last week from what we have been. So people are probably tuning into the stretch run. And of course, I think Flo has probably forced a lot of people to listen to places like us and Medea and Sports News and everywhere else instead of being able to actually watch the game this year. So I wonder about that too. Well, that's not a good thing. But this week, the game is at home, so it'll be on Madison. So everyone can be happy, I think, this coming week. So it'll be on Masson here in D.C. and on Madison. Well, to the extent that the Masson World Series coverage doesn't get in the way. Sorry, Rob. But besides that, I did want to go around. I said last week, Rob, that I would go around fall sports a little bit this week before we got started. I've given them short shrift this year and have not paid as close of attention as I have in the past. So real quickly, just to sort of give everyone a little level set for the rest of the season as teams come down the stretch. Field hockey is 6-8, but they are 2-1 in CAA play. They have 4 games left, including 3 in the conference. 4 teams make the tournament, the CAA field hockey tournament. So they're very much alive for that tournament. I know they still have Northeastern, Towson, and Delaware in conference. And like I said, they're 2-1. So while they have not done as well as they hoped, I thought it was a big improvement from having lost to number 1 North Carolina 9-0 a few weeks ago. They hung pretty tough in a 2-0 loss to Duke this weekend. So maybe things are turning around a little bit for Coach Morgan and the team, and at 2-1 in CAA play, not out of it at all. Cross country is almost over. The CAA championships are coming up. One notable thing for cross country this year, JMU's the host. So this is the 11-2 weekend when the football team's on the bye. It's at the Newmarket Battlefield, which I thought was pretty cool, is the CAA championships this year. So just up the valley a little bit at 11 a.m. on November 2nd. Cross country's had some good results this year. So maybe a couple kids can even qualify for NCAA regionals in Charlottesville after the CAA championships. Volleyball, one of the more successful programs in the fall. I think they would be the first to tell you they're a little disappointed with a 12-6 overall record and a 6-2 conference record. But they are in second place. They are just starting their second time through the CAA. They hit 6 teams make the tournament, which doesn't start until just before Thanksgiving. So JMU is in no real danger yet. I think they're just kind of getting right. They're kind of where football is, just really getting into the meat of the you know, getting to the stretch run and just warming up. And at 6-2 in the conference, still everything ahead of the volleyball team and that crew for the Dukes. Men's soccer, probably the most successful, or at least the one we have the highest hopes for. Dropped a tough game over the weekend, 1-0 to UNC Wilmington after losing 1-0 to number one UVA last week. They stand at 9-5-1, 4-1-1 in the CAA. They have 3 games left in the regular season, so that's kind of notable. I hadn't realized they're that close to the end of the season, Rob. They only play, they have Penn State, Charleston, and William & Mary remaining, and the CAA tournament starts the 8th of November. So they're coming up pretty quick. 6 teams make the men's tournament and the women's tournament, and JMU obviously sitting pretty well at 4-1-1 to be in good shape there. I know that's one of those ones where it's a big, big deal to be in the top 2, I think, right? Because the other, you get a bye. So, you know, JMU needs to sort of keep the hammer down here with just the 2 conference games left, Charleston and William & Mary, to make sure they get into the top 2 there. And then women's soccer, a little bit of a struggle, but interestingly, I didn't realize I'd kind of stopped tuning. I tuned them out a little bit with the 6-10-1 record, but they are 3-3-1 in the CAA. This is their last week of play. They are at UNC Wilmington on Thursday, and they're home for Drexel on this Sunday at 1:00. So sort of homecoming weekend. And their CAA tournament starts the following weekend with 6 teams making the tournament. I'd have to think at 3-3-1, if they could finish strong here, at least split these last 2 games, they're probably also in good shape to at least make the CAA field. So good luck to the women this weekend. And that sort of takes us around the JMU landscape. And now we can get back to football. We know that's what most folks are here to talk about. This is our 4 Downs, brought to you by Mossy Creek Fly Fishing in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You can go by the fly shop there in Harrisonburg and mention the podcast, and you'll get a free, awesome Mossy Creek sticker. So, Rob, why don't you start us off with first down from coming off an interesting game in Williamsburg, I thought.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, it certainly wasn't as exciting as some of the other games. It was kind of just like a pro forma exercise, and I get where you're coming from when you said you're worried about leading into the bye, because it's kind of, I think as a fan base, we're kind of just like, all right, let's go. Let's win these games we got to win. But there wasn't a lot of chatter online about it. There wasn't that much excitement, which is kind of a shame because William & Mary, in-state rival, it's a game I think a lot of us really look forward to. It's a game that draws really well in terms of like a road trip. But it was just kind of like a meh game. So my first down is I'm not really sure what we learned or if we learned anything at all. You know, JMU won a game that it had absolutely no business losing. And they did so convincingly.
Convincingly, yeah.
You know, I think last week you and I had mentioned that one thing we were really looking forward to was just seeing JMU come out from the gun, get out to a lead, not look back. It didn't work out that way. You know, they went down three points. Nine, yeah. No big deal. But then they just kind of – it just was very kind of methodical. Again, went about their business. You know, by like the middle of the second quarter – it was very obvious that they were going to win big and that it wasn't going to do much to excite anybody. Just talking with people during texting and, you know, interacting on Twitter, people were just like, oh, yeah, here we go. I mean, it was, what, a 28-point win, and people were just like, la-di-da. It's weird how they've kind of – how they've separated themselves. So I don't know. It wasn't particularly exciting. It was effective. It was the result they needed. Nobody got banged up. There were several things that I thought improved, but there's nothing that really concerns me any more than it did heading into that game based on what we saw.
Yeah, they got off to a slow start this week. You know, Danucci threw a pick on – it looked like – was that a wheel route or trying to throw – it was just kind of a weird play. Like, they were really locked in on Hamilton. I mean, it was weird to throw kind of down the field to Hamilton.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, like, I didn't mind taking a shot there.
No, I didn't either. I didn't think it was, like, a terrible decision or something. You know,
it's like – it was one of those things. You do what you got to do. I'm not sure he does that in a game that maybe is a little bit closer. I think those are the types of throws that we've seen him tuck or maybe toss out of bounds, and everybody has applauded him for that this year. He took the shot, didn't work out. He didn't really try to squeeze too many more in after that. Didn't really need to because we're getting ridiculous separation. So, yeah, it was one of those games. Like, I was excited that they got it, but I don't know. Like a lot of people, I think I was more looking forward to next weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a hard one. I think one thing we did learn this weekend, Rob, just to play off of what you said, though, we did learn that I think William & Mary's headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know,
their front four was impressive defensively.
Yeah. And it looked like the kids were, I mean, it was homecoming and stuff, and it was kind of cool. We got the Jill Ellis interview, and Mike Tomlin was there, right? I mean, that was kind of cool for them.
Wasn't Marv Levy there too?
Yeah, yeah. But I felt like with Mike London, looked like the kids were playing. You know, they were, I mean, the last couple of years, it's been almost sad. Like, that team has really mailed it in at times. I mean, they just have been uninterested and non-competitive.
Yeah, you don't want to insult people and be like, oh, good job. They played hard.
But they played hard.
They played hard.
And they were, like, and until their quarterback threw that dreadful interception to Wayne Davis.
Yeah.
It was a pretty, first quarter and a half or so, they were in it and the kids seemed to play hard and were having fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple.
The fake field goal.
They didn't feel as far away as they have the last couple of years, where they just
like
felt
a transition
like
a team.
Yeah. There were some talent on the field this week, especially up front. Jamie didn't run the ball that effectively this week. And, William and Mary did a few things. They didn't run the ball particularly well either, other than that, the trick, the sort of whatever.
They didn't run the ball at all after that, right?
But I don't know. I was kind of glad. It just seemed like maybe London's going to give them a little bit of an identity. And I don't know that they knew what they were going to do after Laycock or the last few years of Laycock.
Even though the result doesn't look that impressive, they appeared more prepared than recently. Laycock was a great coach. I don't want to diminish the man's legacy.
No.
But he had lost a few miles off the fastball.
Yep.
The past few years. And the team just didn't look ready to compete week in and week out in the CAA to the level that they're used to, or that they're used to under Laycock. I'm with you. I can see signs of growth. I can see reasons for optimism if I'm a William & Mary fan. It's a weird offense to learn in one offseason, but if that's going to be their identity – when they can recruit players specifically for that type of system, they could be trending in the right direction.
Still no idea what William & Mary's just general athletic direction is right now.
So no.
The new AD, I saw like William & Mary ads on a Metro bus today up here in Northern Virginia, and I thought, what? Are they spending on football? Like, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. But that's not our problem.
Yep.
Right. So my second down, Rob, was Rondale Carter.
Yeah, we could just make him all four downs
this week. Last week was about Daka, who, was good again this week. But this was a reminder, I think Carter's become – I don't know that he's quite reached, like, Jimmy level, but he's right there for me in terms of just the player I love watching. I'm really thankful that he's been a part of the program the last three years, seeing him grow into this. And he was just a man child out there this week. I mean, he just was a monster. And the whole thing with this team, Rob, I thought the secondary played well, much better this week. They seem to be tighter to the receivers. I have no idea what that says against a William & Mary team that really didn't have much offensively, especially a quarterback. But this team is going to be the defensive line. The health of the defensive line and the continued play of the defensive line is where this team is going to make their money. And if they can make a deep run in December, it's going to be because of that group of four. And we've seen it, I think the beginning of the season, we saw a whole lot out of Green and Atarawa on the inside. We'd seen Daka get going the last few weeks. And then this week we were back to the captain, Rondale Carter, taking things over. And yeah, I don't know who else plays.
I think between two of them, they've got 25 tackles for loss.
It's or thereabouts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just Carter was beating the ball carrier to the ball. Getting there for handoffs.
Yeah.
And when they weren't doing that, when they weren't wrapping guys up, they were just kind of doing that assignment football and just crashing the gaps, and they were going nowhere. I mean, they had something like, that one run for 73 yards, and don't quote me on this, but I want to say they had 28 other carries for two more yards.
Yeah. Now, I mean, some of that's because, like, sack yardage takes away, but still.
Yeah, but it's so crazy to think of how just relentless they were. And it was violent.
It was very violent. I mean, fun to watch.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. It was like the old Lawrence Taylor NFL films. Yes. Absolutely crushing guys. Like, good legal hits. It wasn't headhunter. But they were just crushing dudes. I don't know what you do if you're an offensive coordinator. I mean, you can't try to run against them. And, I don't know. I did think the pass defense was better, though.
I thought there were some plays – there were a couple bad throws there, but there was also just, I felt like on just down to down JMU, guys didn't have 3 yards of space when the ball came.
There were times when they clearly were playing like a contained type zone and guys caught it, where in prior weeks they would have scampered for another 15 yards before you even saw anybody else come into the picture.
That's right.
But this time they were just getting tackled, like the safety play. I felt like they appeared to be much more comfortable in their role and knowing where they were supposed to be on the field.
Yeah, I thought
Davis. That was kind of an unfortunate throw, but also was quite a read. I mean, he broke on that ball. He broke on that ball. And,
better than the receiver.
Got there about 5 yards. So it was a combination. Like, it wasn't a great throw, but let's not take away from Davis and the anticipation that he showed, because he came from a good bit away.
He did.
You know, he caught that one on the run. It looked like he was running the pattern, actually.
Yeah, it did. And I thought there were a couple plays. I thought Torres Carroll, 27, you know, he was closer to his man this week.
Yeah. I thought Smith played well.
Smith played well. Yeah. I mean, I thought there was a lot more there from the Dukes in the back end that made us feel a little better. We'll see what happens this week. I did think one thing with Carter and Daka, Rob, you know, I thought Jamie very deliberately this week with William Mary's offense. They seem to, I don't know what you'd call this, more of like what you would expect of the old 52 defenses, but like the end sort of got up the field a couple steps and then contained.
Yeah.
And, you know, Green and Natarawa just kind of held their spot in the middle. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I don't know what, you know, somebody knows better than I do what that is. But it'll be interesting to see how they, if they can have that same success against Flacco this week, who is much more mobile, you know, and what they're going to try to do with him, right? Because, I mean, he's a guy who, if they leave a gap in the middle, he's probably going to try to run.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get all the way to the quarterback, he may get around the, you know, he may spin out and go around the end, sort of Russell Wilson style.
And I guess you could have Holloway or somebody be like a spy.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going
to
do.
That's just, that's like middle of the field. I don't know what you do if that just creates opportunities for the receivers to go over the top. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And it'll be good. I forget, what's the kid's name? Leatherberry, Shane Leatherberry, the receiver. Mm-hmm. Had 5 touchdown catches this week. Now, granted, they were playing Bucknell, so take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, whether it's Rashad or McCormick or Quick Carroll, who's ever on the outside, they're going to, you know, they're going to get a real shot to cover a real receiver this week, you know, who gets the ball from a real quarterback. So it'll be fun to see. I think this is a good chance to see where JMU stands and if the progress we think we saw this week was real or illusory a little bit. So that'll be kind of interesting. What about you for third down, Rob?
Just kind of welcome back return game.
Yeah.
You know, that was really cool to see. Amos, you know, not only did he field everything cleanly, but he had a couple really nice returns. There was great blocking. I just thought that the special teams overall were much better, missed field goal aside.
Uh-huh.
It was just great to see the return game actually working. And then the other thing with return game, I'm so conditioned to just think that the CAA officials have no idea what they're talking about. I was so confused, and I was like livid and going crazy when William Mary kept doing the fair catches.
Yes.
And then they were spotting on the 25. I was like, oh, these officials, I forgot that they even changed that rule.
Well, the weird thing was the first time the kid did it, he ran after, and so it looked weird.
Yeah.
And, like, I think Bryce McGinley was down there, like, asking for a flag.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. But, yeah, they changed that rule. And, yeah, that is funny.
I mean, it's not a bad thing. If you don't think you're that confident in your return game, just take the extra. I mean, the guy who was fielding him on, like, the 4 and just take the out 25.
I don't understand why more teams haven't done this against JMU. Last year, a few teams had picked up on that. I think we saw Weber State do that in the playoffs to JMU a few years ago. Because JMU is very intentionally this year, it's Cam Wise, I think, is doing the kickoffs, and they very intentionally do not kick it in the end zone.
No, they kind of cough,
you know, in the pros,
and sometimes it doesn't work out.
Right. In the pros, the kind of goal is like just bomb it out of the end zone every time. But in college and with JMU's athletes that they have in the coverage game, yeah, they're trying to, you know, have the guy catch it inside the 5 and they're trying to make a stop before the 25 and gain a little advantage there. But yeah, William Mary was – I don't know why more teams don't do that against JMU, because I don't know what the average return is, but I guarantee, at least the lesser teams, it's not the 25.
No.
You know, so.
But anyway, yeah, it just was exciting to see Amos, and it made me realize or kind of remember what a dangerous threat he can be. And if he starts returning the ball with confidence, that can be a huge difference maker down the stretch run and hopefully deep into the playoffs.
Gotcha. So, yeah, it really will be. So my fourth down, I want to revisit Coach Stignetti. So we've I had a few interesting kind of funny things come up, and I wanted to just kind of revisit some of the things we've talked about the last couple of weeks. The first kind of very random, and this is like totally inappropriate to bring up, but why not have fun with it? I had not noticed until a friend of mine this weekend that I got to watch some of the game with, and his wife made the point that Cignetti has a very like, I don't know what you'd call that pose, like the exasperated suburban dad pose.
Yeah.
Right. With the both hands on the back. It's like the mm-hmm. Ned Flanders is upset pose or something.
Yeah. It's almost like he seems like the type of coach who wouldn't yell at you. He'd just be disappointed in you.
It really is.
They'd be like, oh, coach, can't you just yell? Like, I don't want to let you down. He'd just give you that. Come on. What are you doing out
doing
there?
Doing great. Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of cracking me up. I had not noticed that. And then as soon as he said it, I couldn't unsee it from then on.
Yeah.
So that was kind of funny. I did enjoy Cignetti talking about the uniforms today at the press conference, Rob. He, you know, there's been some talk among, you know, certain quarters of the fan base. And you and I have always kind of laughed at the uniform discussion. Not that we don't like cool uniforms here and there and haven't had fun with it, but it's such a lose-lose situation at times in terms of the fan base.
Yeah.
Because you've got this, like, everyone who's younger than us wants to see like 58 different uniforms, and why can't everything be like chrome colored neon, you know,
yeah,
whatever. And then everybody older than us is like, where are the gold pants? Right. Yeah. Where are the gold helmets? Dang it. You know, like, yeah, it's so ridiculous.
It's one of the few things that actually makes me feel young nowadays. The fact that I just can't even imagine being that upset about it.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm just like, oh, wow, okay. I feel like I bond with the millennials or the current students.
Right.
Because I guess more just don't care. Like, just play the game. I actually kind of
enjoyed Cignetti's take today, which was, I think, decidedly old school, but also very new school JMU in terms of the branding.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, well, you know, as far as not playing in a bunch of different uniforms and playing in the same uniform every week or roughly the same look, you know, the place I coached before that was the most successful program I've ever coached at, I don't know if you noticed, but they were in the same uniform every week forever.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Alabama. And he's like, they don't focus on what the uniform is this week. They focus on the game. And I thought that was kind of decidedly old school. But then he also kind of turned it around and said, you know, the school has wants the brand to be on the map a little bit. And they have a certain look and something they're trying to portray about the school. And, you know, we're on board with that. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting. Like, I don't know what that says about, I mean, we have both enjoyed the purple and white, you know, that is something that JMU started really before the 16 Frisco championship is when mm-hmm. They brought out the whole new logo and the rebranding, and the white, purple, white has become the championship uniform and that kind of stuff. So I just thought it was funny that Cignetti was kind of, that was the perfect answer for a coach for me. It was like walking the line.
Such a Saban answer.
Yes. Well, and I think he continues to do this little, the other thing I like about him, I hope this doesn't wear thin over time. But we've talked about this in terms of the way he kind of checks and has at times checked DiNucci this year in mm-hmm. press conferences after the game. And it almost appears to be a little bit like the Belichickian in trying to keep certain players' egos in check.
Yes.
You know, and I think he's not been as hard. I think he's gotten a little – this week, you know, the interception, he was really complimentary of DiNucci this week. I don't think he was I just have started to notice that I think when a player genuinely plays bad, you're not going to hear him do that.
Yeah.
And when a player plays pretty well, he's going to check them. You know, I thought he got on Amos a little bit today on the so one of the reporters asked a question. It might have been Medea about the great effort that Amos made on the 75-yard run mm-hmm. that William & Mary had to chase that guy down. And Cignetti kind of said, you know, it was a great effort. Maybe our fits weren't so good in letting that run happen in the first place. You know, but I thought it was clearly a game where Amos played great, right? I mean, both areas that he contributes to the team too. He played really well. And I don't think there was any concern that like, oh, he's going to be upset if I'm a little critical, where we actually haven't heard him be critical of Amos in the games where he struggled a little bit earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that philosophy from a coach. I'm interested to see if that keeps up. And I hope the players I'm guessing they kind of understand that in the locker room a little bit. I'm going to be critical of you when you play well. I'm going to try to sort of circle the wagons when you don't play well. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, so. I'm fine with it. Although it is funny with Nooch. Like, it was funny because people were like, oh, man, he didn't have a good game. He threw for more yards than he has all year. He had one pick. Right. He still was good. It's just like, it's funny how weeks ago it was like the constant talk was, he's no Shore. He's no, it was just constant, the stuff that just bored you and I to tears and was so unnecessary. And now already it's like, he's off when he's throwing for 250 yards in a game where they really have the other team's just selling out to stop the run. He needed to rally the troops. It just, he's kind of raised his own bar in some sense. You know,
and he made a great play for that first touchdown.
Oh, he did that jump pass?
The jump pass, yeah.
No, and then the other one to Polk was great. He made a couple really nice throws to Brown. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the thing he does best is just spread the ball around. And this was another thing. Like, I didn't think the running game was particularly impressive, but I did think a couple of the guys, Van Horst in particular, were pretty effective in the passing game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's fun. Like, when you've got guys like that, okay, if Will and you're going to stop the front four, Cole off, stop the run. If you can run screen plays and little flares, or even like that wheel route that didn't work out. It is cool. Like it's neat to see so many weapons and to see guys that can be effective even if they're not running the ball particularly well.
Oh yeah, no, he does. And he's getting it, you know, Stapleton both had, you know, contributions this week. Yeah, there's a lot of guys contributing.
The hot take might be, is Dylan Stapleton more valuable at this point
than Riley? I don't know. We'll see when it really matters.
They're both very valuable and I'm happy to have them both on the field. I've been really pleased with how far Dylan has progressed. He really seems to have developed some pretty terrific chemistry with DiNucci.
Yeah.
And you can see when he goes to contact now, he holds that ball in.
Yes.
Like, he clearly has been coached up. Like, he's wrapping it up, bringing it up to his body. Because he's a bruiser, man.
Yeah. He doesn't like to go down. I mean, that's clearly one of those, that tight end mentality of like, one first hit contact isn't going to bring me down. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's good to see. It's going to be fun to watch this team. I mean, I'm like you. I think this week will be fun, but I don't want to get complacent as fans and just think like, okay, let's wait till we get to a real game. You know, we thought that at times last year and we got our ass kicked by Colgate. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to do that the rest of the way. Towson's coming, New Hampshire's coming. You know, there's still games in the regular season that will be a challenge if the team thinks like we do at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking of that, Rob, what are two things? I think we've talked a little bit, but what's one thing maybe you're really looking forward to coming up for homecoming this week?
I guess just seeing how the defense responds to probably the best quarterback they're going to face this year.
Mm-hmm.
Flacco is a dangerous guy for multiple reasons. Not only does he have a good arm, but he is very mobile. Mm-hmm. He can get downfield. Towson is a wildly inconsistent team,
mm-hmm.
but when they're hitting on all cylinders, they can drop 40 plus points on pretty much anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see how they respond to that challenge. And I don't know. I'm very confident that Flacco is probably going to have more defenders in his face than he has the average week.
Mm-hmm.
But if JMU doesn't have kind of all his ducks in a row in the defensive secondary, it could be kind of a long day. So this is one I'm pretty confident. I think the 16.5 line, which I saw come out today, is maybe a little bit off base. I don't know if you saw that.
You think it's a little high?
I think it's a little high.
Okay. But,
I don't know. But,
yeah.
Towson's defense doesn't really worry me. Don't want to see this be a shootout. I'd like to see, again, like every team.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a shootout situation. Not that I don't trust these D. Mm-hmm. It's maybe more that I think Flacco is looking for that one signature game, and this is that opportunity. I don't want to see it, you know. If he has the ball in the end, that's a scary situation. You don't want it fourth quarter. He's got a chance, you know, 2 minutes left. He's got to score a touchdown. He's not the guy you want to give that opportunity to. Let's just put it that way.
And I just don't have any – I don't think I have any real strong feeling about what we're going to get from Towson this week.
No,
you know, they've had some injuries and some really inconsistent performances, but they're really desperate. Mm-hmm. They're 4-3 and this would put them, you know, I mean, and this would be their fourth loss in a year where the CAA is a mess. You know, I think they're 4-3 or are they 3-4? But in either case, I mean, they're really up against it in terms of trying to keep up with the field. out here. I don't know what to make of them. So, you know, they're going to be, I'm sure, to me, it seems like the desperation would balance out any of their previous inconsistency. And the fact that they're, I mean, we've seen it from teams before. They're, it's Bridgeforth and JMU. Teams tend to get up for that. So,
yeah,
that'll be good to see. Yeah, for me, I'd like to see JMU just get back. I would like to see them run the ball. And this is kind of the converse of what you just said, Rob, which is I'd like to see them run the ball and control this game.
I don't want this to get into a shootout. I don't want it to be a track meet.
And JMU, it was funny this week because I think they took what William & Mary gave them. And William & Mary did what we've seen teams – I mean, Villanova did this a little bit too, where they just – they put 8 or 9 guys in the box and they sort of run blitzed all the time. And that left you wide open on the outside for 6-yard passes to Riley whenever you wanted them. And that's great. But I would like to see this week with Towson, who I think we think might be a little bit of a – you know, they struggle a little bit on defense. I'd like to see JMU get back to that kind of 150, 200 yard rushing day where they really control this game. And if they were to win, say, 28-10, that would be perfectly fine with me.
I'd be ecstatic.
Right. I don't have any, or 38, whatever we saw, you know, just something where they kind of have control of this game by halftime. And even if they're not more than, say, like 10 points ahead, where I just feel like, this isn't, like you said, not turning into a party in the end zone game here. You know, yeah, that's what I'd like to see. So, Rob,
but not a Mike Houston, let's try to win this one 3-0 special.
No, I don't want that either. I mean, no. I don't think that's Cignetti.
It's just kind of steady as she goes. Mm-hmm. Do what you got to do. I don't want them to just like take their foot off the gas and play total possession or like ball control. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's going to be a little more measured. Like you, I'd love to see the run game going because that's just going to keep Flacco off the field.
Yeah, yeah, you know? that's exactly right.
If they can just keep moving the chains with the running game, by all means, let's do it. And then, you know, Polk is going to get his. Yeah. Riley and Dylan are going to get theirs. We saw this week Jake Brown is ready. Kendall Dean's had a couple nice catches the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Baby Ravenel's been a little quiet, but he's made big plays this year. I mean, they've got weapons. It's just a matter of kind of striking while the iron's hot, but establish that running game first. Old school football.
And to me, it's homecoming. You got one job, that's to win the game. And, you know, it's your last week before the bye. Whatever happens, if they get out of this with a win, you know, barring any massive injury, I'm going to try not to panic about the method. You know, get out of this, get to 8-1. You'll be in great shape with a bye coming up and, you know, another couple of big, you know, the New Hampshire and Richmond coming to town after the bye. Really, your last – I think last super competitive game with New Hampshire coming after the bye. And I guess that brings us, speaking of, so we had shelved our LOL Spider section because our friends in the RVA had managed to win a couple. Who knows how. And sure enough, this week
they, magic.
They did, right? And sure enough, this week they had another one in the bag. They had it all wrapped up. They had a win over a lot of people kind of laugh at the Ivy League, but I think we know listening to Brian McLaughlin.
Hey, Princeton's no joke.
Yeah, we know the Ivy League is no joke. Their recruiting is kind of outstanding because they have a little something to offer to recruits that some other schools don't.
It's also – they don't have scholarship, but they just give grants to as many people as they want.
As they want, right, exactly. You know, and
they don't have scholarships, so they have $10 billion endowments to tap right. into. So, Crimea River about – non-scholarship football.
Right. And if you come here and play football here, you'll probably be fine in life.
Yeah.
With our alumni network after this. So
my cousin's friend in high school, star running back at their high school, and he was getting recruited by big time schools, Big Ten and everything like that. And he was a running back. He also got recruited by Harvard. Mm-hmm. And all these big schools are selling him what you'd expect, like, oh, you come with us, you're going to go to the NFL. And this guy was looking at him. He was like a 5'10 Asian running back.
Right.
And he was like, I ain't going to the NFL.
Right.
He's like, I'm going to Harvard. And he went to Harvard, was like all conference, set all these records, walked right into a job on Wall Street.
Yep.
And 4 years later, bounced back in his Harvard MBA. And the guy just, I mean, at age 17 or 18, he was like, he was smart guy, but he wasn't getting to Harvard without football guy. But he's like, I bet you if I play football, I'm going to pass most of my classes and a lot of people are going to give me a job.
Right, right.
And if I beat Yale, I'm pretty much going to have – and, I mean, worked out for the guy. So, yeah. Kudos. There is that element. Like, there are plenty of smart people that play football that know they're not going to defy the odds and play on Sundays. And
yes.
If you can go get a Princeton degree, a Harvard degree, a Yale degree. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And God bless you if you can come from two touchdowns down with, like, 3 minutes to go to beat Richmond.
Wait, that didn't happen, did it, Rob?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not only are you going to get, you know, jobs from every Yale alum on the planet, pretty much every JMU alum is going to try to hire you out of thankfulness as well. You know?
Oh, this was, I'm a little torn about whether we should be doing this segment or not in general, but
I don't want to jinx it.
This one was pretty special because they really had this one in the bag, and Yale threw about a 30-yard pass to the end zone. Kid made a pretty good catch in the end zone with, like, I don't know, a minute and a half, less than a minute 20 to go to cut it to six. And then they got an onside kick, which is something you almost never see with the new kickoff rules now, where you can't put it overload one side. And Richmond managed to botch an onside kick, and Yale with no timeouts went down the field and managed to throw another 20-yard touchdown at the end of the game.
That's the type of thing. If they had fans, they would be crushed.
Yes.
Thankfully, it's not really affecting too many people this morning.
So that's what happens. So that brings us to overtime, Rob. You want to introduce an overtime topic? Thanks to everybody who keeps submitting things. We're going to take a little break from the tailgate stuff this week, though.
Yeah, there were a lot of good, like, tailgate drinks and all that, and then a lot of Halloween movies, which I guess we could probably squeeze in next week or do some sort of Halloween-related thing.
Yeah, I don't know that many Halloween. I mean, the horror movie side, but I don't know if that's really, like, all Halloween. I mean, Charlie Brown, Pumpkin Patch,
Yeah, I mean, Great Pumpkin, though. Mm-hmm. It's not really, no. I don't know, whatever. That's beginning of the end of the list for me.
Yeah.
We're just going to do kind of bucket list trips, and I don't know if that's, you open up for whatever you want. That's activities you want to do or just places you want to see, but we'll just each do a couple. So why don't you start off?
Well, you are way ahead of me on the world traveling list, so I know yours will be, I'm interested in yours for sure. Mine are probably a little on the simpler end. I want to go to Alaska. I still haven't been there, so that's
that was the first time I went.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So I would really like to do it in some kind of a, like, at least a, you know, at least part of the trip being some type of camping or hiking or ATV or mountain bike or something, you know, something kind of adventurous as a part of, I mean, not just like a pure cruise, you know.
Oh, that's the fishing. Only cruise that appeals to me.
Yeah, you're right. And obviously some fishing involved. But yeah, I mean, Alaska's always been on my list in terms of the United States. I am fortunate enough to say I've been to Hawaii. So, I mean, that's the one really out there trip in the U.S. that I'd love to do.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's my top two. My parents have been multiple times.
Okay.
They've done cruises there because that's really the most feasible way to do it.
Do it, yeah.
In your 70s. But they did it again, I think, for the second time last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they went up like a week and a half early and went to Denali National Park. My dad wanted to see moose and bears. And they were fortunate to see both.
That's awesome.
But it's awesome. Google this when you get off the pod. Mm-hmm. DIY AK. It's a fly fishing video about these guys who did a do-it-yourself Alaska trip. They didn't want to do like a lodge. And it's like a full-on, it's like a 10-minute video. It's not going to be a big time commitment. But they did a full-on wilderness adventure, you know, took the back, you know, the bush plane back in there, got dropped off, and then did a 100-mile float down the river with grizzlies the whole time. I mean, they're fly fishing with shotguns on their backs.
Right.
Just catching, you know, it's crazy the fish you're seeing at, which is amazing when you see all these salmon, and it's just like literally, you know, fish in a barrel, but that also attracts the bears and everything. But it's just the pure wilderness. They don't reveal what river it is. It's like, you know, secret spot. It's just breathtaking. I don't want to go to that degree of wilderness, but I would love to go check out one of those lodges and do some salmon fishing and all that. I'd love to see Denali. I'd love to see.
Yeah.
My cousin, who's a ski photographer, is up to Valdez. A bunch for helicopter skiing. And the pictures he comes back with are just unreal. Looks amazing. So, yeah, that was my top choice as well.
Nice. All right. Good. Well, what's another one for you, Rob?
I'm fortunate where I've been to China a couple times and it's fascinating. It's just like so different. Really, really cool. I would like to do an extended kind of a food tour of Asia. Kind of like just street food. Mm-hmm. Like I would love to do all the food stalls and everything in Singapore and Vietnam and Thailand. Mm-hmm. I've traveled a lot of places. Mm-hmm. Asia's some of the most fun places I've been. It's the most challenging. It's just very different. It just kind of pushes you out there. Mm-hmm. There's no like phonetically working through signs or anything like that. It is really, really hard, really, really rewarding. And the food is just amazing. Like I backpacked through China and then I went back and was there for like a month or 5 weeks or something in business school.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loved it. Food was amazing. The people are cool. It's just like super, super different. But I'd love to go to Singapore.
Uh-huh.
And like, I'd love to Vietnam. I'd love to go to Thailand. I just want to do like an extended, take like, you know, 2 months or 3 months of my life and just work my way through and really get off the beaten path. But really just explore all the food.
That's awesome.
And all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really, really great. I don't know. I was trying to think, I thought about those and I was hoping you would come up with one of those because I was like, I don't know that I could put that. I don't know if I'm quite as adventurous as you are in that way. But that's awesome.
I would need a friend. I've gone in the past with friends that live there or classmates or natives. And that's even more fun because then you get to know other people and you really can dive in.
That's awesome.
And you feel like you're embracing it, not just, it's not like, oh, look, Eiffel Tower, you know,
right.
Big Ben.
Right.
You're like hanging out and just going to somebody's house.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, a sailing trip of some kind is really high on my list. Has been mm-hmm. since I was like in, but really young.
you're Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, a little bit. It's funny. I'd love to do a Pacific trip, but I don't trust myself that I need to do like a BVI trip first or a Caribbean trip first mm-hmm. to see if I'm actually capable from a like stomach GI standpoint, mm-hmm. right? Of getting used to it, being on the water for a week or two. I mean, I love the idea of going to Tahiti or Fiji or, you know, South Pacific a little bit. But I don't know, you know, those are really long trips at sea. And I don't know. I need to learn first somewhere a little more forgiving. So yeah, but any kind of a sailing trip for me it's really high on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just sail through the Caribbean or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Cause you get to access like all the cool hideaway beaches mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. just low key, you can avoid the big ports where there's all the mm-hmm. cruise ships and everything.
Yeah.
Access stuff you couldn't ever get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess the other big thing I want to see, and this isn't really a destination mm-hmm. as much as it is, I would really love to see the Northern Lights.
Me too. That's a huge one.
And like, I don't know how you plan that. I know people who have spent years, you know, like 40th birthday, I'm going to go do it. And they take trips and it just doesn't work out.
Right.
So like, I guess you got to choose a place you also would like to see.
Right.
So I've been to Iceland and it was awesome. But I think I'd like to try to go to Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Just the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. That's like just epic, epic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To go back there and see all that. So I would like to try to do that around the time of year and see the Northern Lights. But I figure even if you don't see it,
mm-hmm.
seeing just the mountains and all those vistas in Norway.
Yeah, it's hard because I thought about like Antarctica, which is one that I like have always thought like that's what's cool. But the sort of hassle of getting to and from, right? And the cost of it is so prohibitive
expensive.
And,
yeah, taking ice icebreakers,
right? To that, where I think most of the northern stuff, whether it's Alaska or going up to Scandinavia, that kind of stuff, it's much more appealing in that way. I think Patagonia is kind of the same way for me. I think I may have said that one on here before. That's probably my other one.
I would love to go down there, and one of those ranches with the gauchos where you ride horses, go fly fishing, and just eat steak.
Yeah,
that seems like heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anything with, for me, it's my last one's definitely mountain related. So I was torn between Patagonia or the Himalayas, but you know, either one, I would love to go somewhere where there's big mountains and that kind of stuff. I mean, Patagonia seems amazing. I know we have a couple friends who have done it and, that would be high on my list.
Well, and you've run laps around me in terms of like the national parks. In the
Midwest, right.
And that is huge for me. Like we're in the process. Fourth graders get national park entries for free for their entire
family. Oh,
my youngest is a fourth grader. So we're trying to use that as an excuse to visit least one or two of the big parks. We're looking at spring break, but that's not like the best time for Yellowstone or any of those, but we might do Joshua Tree.
Nice.
And then I don't know if we can do it in the summer. I don't want it in the spring, but I would like to see more of Utah. And I know that doesn't sound
like I love Utah.
Super glamorous,
it's amazing.
But like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like I've only been skiing out there. But like Moab and, you know, the canyons, all that stuff. It's just,
Oh, it's amazing.
It looks like Mars. I mean, it's like the most amazing landscape. So I'm just kind of dying to see more of Utah and the American West.
Yeah, the one that I have missed on my parks, I would love to do the Boundary Waters. Mm-hmm. I have never done that, and I've had kind of, you know, I have an opportunity every couple years to do this, and it just has not worked out in my life. And it will not again for the next couple, I don't think. But I'm still hopeful, sort of northern Minnesota, you know, to be able to do a canoe. I have a couple buddies who every couple years do a canoe trip up there. That's one I'd love to do too.
Yeah, just there, like, I feel like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan are grossly underrated.
Yeah.
And they just, every time I talk to somebody who goes there, I feel like they come back and they're like, I'm buying a retirement home there.
That's right.
That is the best place ever for in the summertime. That place is heaven on earth. You know, there's just miles and miles of water and good fishing and good food and great beer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Rob, we should wrap up on one back to football for a second. You okay with that?
Yeah. I think our listeners who anybody's still around might appreciate that.
Yeah, no, we just wanted to say I think we thought it was really cool that game day's going to Brookings, South Dakota this week for NDSU at SDSU game.
Speaking of Wisconsin losing,
really cool. Yeah, the Wisconsin loss propelled an FCS game back to the top. Really happy for South Dakota State. Really happy that it's not NDSU. And honestly, I'm really happy to see them go. I mean, I know they've been to HBCUs, they've been to Ivies, they've been to a couple like, you know, interesting historical matchups before. But to me, the NDSU and JMU games have been the best in terms of showing what our level is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting that they're going to another place that I fully respect. You know, I mean, I think everybody agrees they've earned it on the field, you know, South Dakota State over the last 5 or 10 years. And it should be really cool. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a ton of NDSU people there, but that's going to be fun. And then, Rob, just with the you know, the Furman loss last week, you know, we're not there yet, but man, JMU, that's what I'm saying. Get a win, get to the bye. This has really started to separate, and we'll see what happens in that Dakota Marker game this week. But those top three, I mean, the two Dakotas, JMU, and then out west, Sacramento State and Weber State, who play pretty soon here. But that's about it. I mean, Furman lost this week. I don't know that there's anybody outside of that five. I think earlier in the season, you and I talked about maybe there were more teams than that we thought could really make a run at the actual trophy. I'm not sure anybody outside of that five right now I feel real comfortable with. Villanova. But
no, but
you know,
you're going to have teams that are probably good enough on any given Saturday to win, but that'll be sitting home in the playoffs.
That's right.
You know, the CAA is going to have some good teams that don't make the playoffs because they just stumble. You know, New Hampshire is kind of vulnerable after losing to Delaware. But New Hampshire could come in and, I mean, they could beat JMU and be right back in there. Delaware's kind of on the edge. Towson's on the edge. There's a lot of really good teams in the CAA. Sacramento State, even. They've been red
awesome.
Hot.
Yeah.
But didn't they have, like, two losses earlier? I mean, it's...
Yeah, they did, but they're both FBS.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Realize,
so, yeah.
I apologize
both
for that.
I know.
Like you said, Furman losing to Citadel. It is kind of difficult to see where things shake out. And people, it's like you can't take these like William and Mary like games for granted.
No,
you know, you just you need to win the games you need to win. You can't drop any of these unexpected losses. It can ruin your whole season, leave you on the outside looking in.
Yeah, well, Youngstown got their ass kicked this weekend by Southern Illinois. So there's just Eastern Washington is down. Sam Houston's actually kind of righted the ship a little bit, but
Cal Davis is kind of a joke.
Cal Davis has become a joke from what we thought. Jacksonville State is terrible. Kennesaw is just trash, even though they're winning.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to the playoffs and it's all matchups. I mean, I'm not saying anybody can't. There's a larger group of teams who could beat any of those top five on a given week. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I just would be surprised if anyone from outside of that group of five wins the whole thing. And that's less teams than I felt at this point in many past seasons. So for me with JMU right now, it's like everybody wants, you know, for the fans to get disappointed, it's like, wait, take a step back. And, you know, other teams are finding ways to lose games. And so far, JMU has not done that.
No, and I'm very pleased with that JMU taking care of business. But, like, I don't think this is like 2 years ago when the entire season was a precursor to JMU versus NDSU.
Well, it's especially not. No.
Yeah.
The matchup side of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's different. And this is a huge game, NDSU and South Dakota State this weekend. Yeah. Other than kind of, I guess, Auburn, LSU, it is clearly, in my mind, the second best game in college football this weekend.
It is, absolutely.
You know, this is no joke. And they deserve game day. Game day was at LSU, what, 2 weeks ago for the Florida game?
Yeah, and they may be back there for Alabama.
For Alabama.
They'll be covering LSU again, most likely.
But this is not like, they're not settling. This is the biggest, one of the biggest games in college football this weekend.
Yeah, it really is.
South Dakota State absolutely can win this. And that won't knock North Dakota State out of a seed. You know, it'll just kind of maybe flip-flop the seeds that the teams have going in.
So. Well, what's really scary, and this is where it's going to get really funny as this season goes along, and we'll find out. I mean, clearly the Sacramento State, Weber State, whoever wins the Big Sky, I think he's in great shape to be a top four seed. You know, if JMU could run the table, they'd be in great shape. Rob, the controversy will start. Well, let's just see what happens this weekend. You know, if NDSU wins, it probably solves itself. They're number one until they lose. Yeah. JMU stays number two. I don't know what happens to SDSU. If the Jackrabbits win this week over the Bison,
they could be from JMU.
Yeah, we're going to get into real – well, I think they probably deservedly so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any argument.
I wouldn't have any argument if they left JMU. What scares me is, you know, there's then – now we're in the possibility of –
does JMU drop below NDSU?
Does JMU, right. Does NDSU. And if they don't, though, the most incredible part of this, just putting it out there, December 20th, semifinal Saturday at Bridgeforce Stadium, it's not impossible if SDSU wins this weekend that North Dakota State becomes the 3 seed and we might finally get our wish at home, right? We've kind of been hoping for that. So it's October 21st right now, so 2 months away from that, but it's not out of the question. And you know,
that's the name of our Christmas party, though. Oh, please no.
I'd be screwed.
Jessica just nailed it down on Saturday night.
Otherwise the Dukes could be in Fargo that weekend and we'll all be angry and yelling at the television if that's what happens. And for all we know, we could lose a Colgate-esque squad again in the round of 16. So no need to get ahead quite yet. It was hard not to look ahead when I thought, man, if SDSU won and North Dakota State dropped to the 3 seed, because to me, it would be hard, even with all of NDSU's success, it would be hard to, you know, a JMU team who didn't lose an FCS game, be hard to jump them. I think, and never put it past the committee to give something to NDSU.
Yeah. It's just tough. That's where the CA beating itself up could hurt.
Has hurt us.
You know, it's like you get to the end of the year and it's like, oh, wow, they beat a bunch of teams that finished 7-4, you know.
Well, one thing that will really help JMU is for Villanova to just keep winning.
Yes.
I think that game, if they stay healthy, based on what we saw when we played them, that game's going to get better and better. And weirdly, the Stony Brook game has improved with time.
Yeah.
Just a couple more weeks, too. So. Would really like to see that continue.
I mean,
so.
I guess the CIA is still in the running for 4, maybe 5, but
it was weird. I saw Brian and Sam. One of them had 5, and one of them had 6 today. Now they both said they didn't imagine that's how it would work out.
Because you got JMU and Nova, I think you got to consider locks to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. And then you've got Stony Brook, Elon, New Hampshire, Delaware, all there
on the bubble.
Yeah, very very bubble-ish. All very like 20-30. Range.
I got to think at least one, if not two of those guys will play themselves out of it.
I think they will too. I think the interesting thing this year will be like we said, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Kennesaw. Somebody's going to get in for the Big South one way or the other. But Jacksonville State has played themselves out of the OVC this year. So there's not going to be a second team from there most likely. I don't know with Furman drop, like I'm not sure who else takes the bids this year. Right. Yeah. I don't know where somebody's got to get a bid at some point. And that's where I feel like JMU, get to 8-1, lock your playoff seat, lock your spot in the playoffs first, and then let's move on from there.
This is where the Ivy League needs to get over itself and just join the playoffs.
They do.
It would be fun. I guess they've got this whole, like, they don't want to lose to a JMU. They don't want to lose to a state school or one of these like you know, Southwest regional type universities, but get over themselves.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Like, nobody in their right mind is going to think any less of a Princeton or a Yale or a Harvard if they lose to North Dakota State. I mean, it's like, get over it.
Right, right.
It's going to be fun. It would be alumni engagement, and they're good teams.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I would love to see
Dartmouth.
Yeah. Or a couple years ago, Harvard. I mean, like, these are really, really good teams that play good football, that get good fan support for rivalry games. I got to think, like, I mean, goodness gracious, if JMU hosted, like, a Harvard or a Princeton for a play, that would be amazing. Or if they went there, like, I would love to go see a game at Soldier Field or at the Yale Bowl or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That'd be amazing. That'd be really, really fun.
Yeah.
It just stinks because, I mean, they've gotten on board and they've done well and had some big upsets in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they're so reluctant to jump on board with the FCS playoffs. But
yeah, I don't know why either.
It would be a better product if you had the top Ivy League teams in there because they'd be a multi-bid conference some years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this year they'd be a threat to go pretty deep, if not, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but Princeton looks like the type of team that could go at least to the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
If not further.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we'll be talking playoffs a lot the next few weeks, Rob. I don't know. We'll have some fun next week on the bye week. I will be in Minnesota next week, weirdly enough.
Okay.
I think in time to pod on Monday night.
I will be returning from Atlanta. I'm going to my football-less other alma mater's homecoming.
Oh, yes. Nice. All right.
I believe we have an Uncle Cracker concert.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Instead of football game. I will not be attending that.
Okay. Wow. Nothing screams Atlanta like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't know what it is. Like, Indigo Girls are alums. They couldn't get them this year for some reason, but we've got Uncle Cracker.
Oh, boy.
So we shall see. I will, like I said, I will not be attending that. No. I will be watching JMU on my phone and hanging out with friends watching all the other games Saturday afternoon. So.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk next Monday. I hope the Nats will still be alive. We'll see what happens.
Well, I know you don't know. You said that. I did not.
I know.
Go well, Tuve.
All right. Rob, I will talk to you next Monday, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, have a good week, everybody.
Go Dukes.
Woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more. For dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet, through my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt. Then I washed my face and combed my hair and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. I'd smoked my mind the night before with cigarettes and songs I'd been picking. But I lit my first and watched a small kid playing with a can that he was kicking. Then I walked across the street and caught the Sunday smell of someone's frying chicken. Lord, it took me back to something that I lost somewhere, somehow along the way. On a Sunday morning sidewalk, I'm wishing, Lord, that I was stoned. 'Cause there's something in a Sunday that makes a body feel alone.